Our last oral argument this morning is 824-0514, Rose versus the State of Minnesota. As council is approaching and everyone else is being seated, I'll just remind the appellant's counsel that, as I said, this is LaRose, excuse me, versus State of Minnesota, 824-0514. Since the respondent did not file a brief, appellant will simply have 15 minutes to make their argument. So counsel for the appellant, whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone, adjust the podium to your level up and down, and begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
May it please the court, my name is Eric Withall. I'm an attorney with the Appellate Public Defender's Office. I appear before this court today representing the appellant who is present in the gallery today, Arthur David LaRose. Your Honors, we are asking this court to reverse Mr. LaRose's only conviction entered 30 years ago by guilty plea based on two deficiencies in the guilty plea process. The first error has to do with the accuracy of the guilty plea, and the second error has to do with the voluntariness of Mr. LaRose's guilty pleas. And if the court is interested, I'd like to start with the second issue, the voluntariness issue, that has to do with the plea agreement that called for a stay of imposition. Our contention today is that baked into an agreement for a stay of imposition, the rehabilitative purpose is that if someone performs successfully on probation, a felony conviction is deemed a misdemeanor. The problem with a stay of imposition, with the promise, the baked-in promise of a misdemeanor, is that if it's treated as a felony in all relevant contexts, well, it's not a misdemeanor. Essentially, our argument is if it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, you don't get to call it a goose. So in this case,
to address that issue, if we agree with you on the accuracy.
That's right, Your Honors. I mean, the accuracy and the voluntariness are two independent grounds that would invalidate Mr. LaRose's guilty plea and require plea withdrawal under the manifest injustice standard in Rule 15 in the case law. The reason I'm starting with the second issue, the stay of imposition issue, is I think it's interesting, and it also, you know, bears directly to how Mr. LaRose's career, 20 years almost as an elected official, was impacted by how Minnesota case law treats stays of imposition as felonies. I mean, if we're bridging the divide between Minnesota jurisdiction and the tribal courts apply Minnesota law to determine whether a Minnesota conviction is a felony. They're not applying their own interpretation of the law. They're not applying their own rules. Their election ordinances say, and it's cited in the appendix in the appellate decision, they say that the applicable law is the jurisdiction where the conviction was obtained. So they cited, you know, State versus SAM, which is a 2017 Minnesota Supreme Court decision interpreting this, or Ouellette, where the Supreme Court has universally and consistently held that stays of imposition are still treated as felonies, really in every context. If you want to become a peace officer, you can't get a post license.
Well, we would be plowing new ground by holding that a plea premised on the idea that a successful completion of a stay of imposition would result in a misdemeanor is in every case by nature involuntary because it's an illusory promise, right? I mean, there's no existing case law that has come to that precise conclusion.
There's no existing case law directly on point with that exact holding, right? But there is a wealth of case law at the Minnesota Supreme Court applying how a stay of imposition is treated in all of these contexts. I cited a whole list of them in my brief. So I don't think that we're plowing, you know, new earth by applying existing rules and applying the reasoning of this court and the Minnesota Supreme Court for over 20 years of consistent precedent.
But theoretically, I mean, if we ruled in your favor on that ground, essentially every person that entered a plea to a felony under a plea agreement that contemplated a stay of imposition would later have a ground for plea withdrawal, right? I mean, because it's people are still getting this. That remains the state of the law.
The reason it would not open the floodgates, I think, would be twofold. I mean, you'd be announcing a new rule of law that would be prospective in application, wouldn't be retroactive. And the second reason is you need to have standing in fact, injury in fact, to claim that you were denied the benefit of the bargain, not just the theoretical possibility that you couldn't become a peace officer if you didn't meet other qualifications or had no interest. You know, if you think about it, like, part of the reason that Mr. LaRose is an outlier is that, as I highlighted at the beginning of the argument, he has no other convictions, right? Like, somebody who engages in recidivism would be equally ineligible on independent grounds and would not invalidate their plea. So I think the number of people who would be impacted by a ruling, even if it was retroactive, would be relatively small.
Or if we were to conclude that the factual basis were inadequate, we wouldn't need to address any of that.
Oh, that's exactly right. I mean,
Can you tell me this? You asked the request for relief in the post-conviction court was for plea withdrawal. Normally, if a case comes up to us and we conclude that, yes, the plea was invalid for some reason, we reverse and remand to give the defendant an opportunity to withdraw his plea. You saying we should not do that in this case? We should simply instead vacate his conviction? Do you have any case where we've gone straight to vacating the conviction? Or is this case different because the state has essentially said it's not seeking to pursue this conviction?
I think the fact that the state has joined us in our request for a remedy separates this case from the typical case. I think it's very atypical for the state to join us both in our request for a remedy at the district court and at the appellate court. That could make this case stand out to justify this court reversing from this level. Certainly, I think it's more common for this court to do it in the case of the district court kind of essentially refuses the scope of the remand and it has to come back up, this court will issue a decision. We've certainly seen it in a couple of sentencing departure type arguments where the district court doesn't follow the scope of the remand, and certainly it could apply here as well. You know, we don't strongly oppose sending it back to the district court with instructions for plea withdrawal, but I think it's more efficient to have an order from this court just saying that the conviction is vacated.
What would be the mechanism for doing that? What would be, how do we vacate the, I mean, even if we remand, I mean, even in cases where there's like a 60904 problem, right, where there's been a duplicate conviction, we have to remand with instructions for the district court to vacate the conviction.
Yeah, I mean, two responses. So I think it's within this court's authority in the chapter on Court of Appeals saying that there's an array of remedies this court is able to grant, and that includes just reversing the post-conviction court and granting on the what we actually asked for in the post-conviction pleadings. But the second answer is yes, of course, if this court reverses the plea, this case doesn't actually automatically go away. What we would predict is that the state would, you know, then subsequently dismiss the case because, as we know, when you withdraw a guilty plea, the case isn't also dismissed automatically. So there is some benefit to remanding it to Cass County for the county attorney to have essentially the right of first refusal whether to continue prosecuting this case.
Well, and actually the correspondence that we got from Cass County says, I support petitioner's appeal and urge this court to grant the relief requested. And then the ultimately conclusion of your brief was, plea withdrawal is necessary. So we would have to be assuming that they supported outright vacation for us of the conviction for us to get there, right? So it's probably safer for us to, if we're in agreement, to reverse and remand, right?
We don't oppose that remedy in any way. It's just our preference was kind of the initial ask to just reverse from here. But we don't disagree with that in any way. And I think from the prosecutor's letter, we can predict how they would, you know, treat this case going forward. You know, I guess
quit while you're ahead.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time, Your Honor. We would ask this court to remand to the district court to vacate Mr. LaRose's guilty plea.
Thank you. And I do know for the record, even though the state did not file a brief, their position was in agreement with the appellant's position. So that being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, Mr. Whittle.
Thank you for your time.
All rise.